This is episode one of the Thinking Habits podcast. First thing to say is I'm absolutely overwhelmed by the positive and encouraging messages from the intro. It was just 15 minutes of me talking off the top of my head, so I'm just so pleased that it resonated with a few of you, and I really hope that what we continue to create with this people, and that people enjoy it, because at the end of the day, there's no other ulterior motive to it. It's just about promoting conversation, helping people to talk. And I'll be honest, it's a bit of free therapy for me, isn't it? You know, I get to remind myself that it's okay to talk and it's okay to share these things. I went through a long period of bottling things up, and I'm 42 in a couple of months. I can't be carrying all that baggage anymore, especially when I'm carrying a bit more around the middle. So today also is the first interview that I've done for the podcast. It was a good practice. It's as much a test of the technology as a test of my burgeoning interview skills, and a test of the podcast format as it is. It was a wonderful interview. A very good friend of mine, Jonathan Midwood. Jonathan's the general manager of Up and Running. That's a chain of sports stores up and down the country. He's got a degree in psychology. He's doing an MBA at the moment. And he founded Head to Heart Network in 2016, providing information, inspiration and advice on leading a mindful life in a stressful world. I'll leave it to Jonathan to explain more about what that journey entails, but it's a very interesting story, and it resonates a lot with me. There are a lot of similarities between Jonathan and I, as you'll probably, those who know me, will attest to when you hear the interview. I first met Jonathan early 2000s. It's been nearly 20 years, and we bonded immediately on a very, very similar shared outlook on life, as well as on music. I was listening to the album Stacked Up by Censor, which always makes me think of Jonathan, because I think it's one of his favourite albums. So I'll let Jonathan do the talking. As ever, feedback on the interview would be much appreciated, and I'll speak to you after the interview. Cheers.
First of all, thanks so much for joining me for my very first interview, which is quite exciting, actually. But I'd like to kind of get a bit of an understanding. I mean, I know a bit about it, but tell me a little bit about the journey that got you to Head to Heart Network. What kind of preceded that, and how did you? What was the sort of genesis of that idea?
It actually came out of a bit of trauma. 2013, I had a breakdown brought on by work-related stuff and the recession, and worrying about what I was going to do if my job disappeared. And really, it was a friend of mine who sort of turned me on to a bit of mindfulness, a bit of meditation. And, you know, being the person I am, I tended to sort of read around the subject and read as broadly as I possibly could, which sort of got me into Buddhism and sort of spiritual teachings, as well as the more secular stuff. And it's really, I've always had a bit of a, I won't say what they call me at work, but I am very wordy, very verbose. So it was always one of those things that I liked to, write about stuff. So it really came out of that sort of trauma, journaling, understanding myself, both from a sort of a psychological standpoint, but also a spiritual, wider, what's going on in the world sort of perspective. Yeah. And that's where it all came from. So that really was where it started.
Oh, so you've got is it psychology degree?
Yeah, I got a degree in psychology in 1996, but really did nothing with it. Did psychology degree. I say it was the worst thing I ever did, because it makes you look at your navel a lot. but I have to say, it's one of those things that actually, in hindsight, actually was a very useful thing.
I was gonna ask that, actually, whether or not it helped you to sort of galvanise your journey when you were coming through that period of trauma. Did it help you? Was the kind of critical thinking skills that you would have learned at that point useful?
Yes and no. I think the problem is when you're in sort of the period where the sort of the black dog sat on your shoulders, the problem you've got is that, you know, all you can see is basically darkness and fur. But the reality is that, you know, there is a certain degree of sort of self-reflectiveness that's very important, because obviously on a healing journey, you need to understand what's perhaps triggering the background and causing you the problems in the first place.
Yeah.
The challenge I had with the psychology degree, and particularly, you know, the wealth of information that's out there, both in text and online, is that it's so vast that sometimes you can get more confused than you can actually, you know, find yourself out of a hole. And for me, mindfulness and perhaps, you know, the Buddhist approach was very much the ladder that got me out of that hole.
I do that resonates quite a lot with me. I went through I tried a lot of different things, and the kind of mindfulness was one of the tools that I used. I remember we've discussed this in the past, haven't we? But mindfulness and Buddhism, going to podcasts such as Tara Brach and Against the Stream and things like that, really kind of it opened my eyes to a different way of thinking. It wouldn't necessarily convince me to delve into the more spiritual side, but that's personal choice. But I certainly was able to take some, cherry pick the bits that worked for me, and I think that's where it's very useful. I don't know how you feel about that.
Yeah, no, I'd absolutely agree. I mean, I think, you know, we live in a world of many different faiths, religions, secular, non-secular, you know, we live in a sort of a very versatile and very interesting world. And therefore, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, either religious or non-religious backgrounds, or, you know, specific psychology sort of methods, technology, techniques, etc. You tend to find that there's a commonality that runs through all of it. And that self-reflectiveness is actually very important, because, you know, you find out what triggers issues, but you also find out what works for you. And it could be that, you know, you're into mindfulness. It could be that you're into, you know, a faith-based treatment. It could be that you're into a CBT, which is very analytical. Ironically, I did do a CBT course when, you know, which seems to be the NHS likes to refer you to it. And while I found it very interesting, and I found it very structured and very sort of cognitive based, it lacked a certain degree of heart, which is really where the head to heart thing came from. Because
it's really funny you should say that. I think that's one of the things that I mean, again, we've talked in the past, we're very much alike in our thinking patterns and neuroses, I think, is something we've touched on before. I found CBT very difficult, and even practicing as a mental health nurse, delivering CBT techniques, and I'd watch it work for some people, but when it was physician heal thyself, when you flip it back, I just picked it to pieces, and I couldn't embrace it for what it was, and that's what took me to a more sort of dialectical therapy, which ended up working for me. But I've seen some incredible results on CBT, and I certainly, like you say, I certainly wouldn't knock it, because I think it's different strokes for different folks. But I agree, it just wasn't. I left wanting more, I think is what the best way I could describe it.
But I think. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very valid point. I actually think it's quite, I think that's the problem I have with the, and I don't want to get into sort of politics and NHS and stuff like that, but for me...
Go on for hours.
there were two avenues available at that time. It was either I was going to go on medication, or I was going to have CBT, or both.
Yeah.
And for me, it was, one was a chemical pill, the other one was a coarse pill. And from that point of view, I didn't feel as if, for me personally, it was offering me anything that connected here. You know, connected here, but it didn't make me feel any better than I was feeling at the time. And, you know, understanding the logical thing about, you know, how heart palpitations, heart raising, you know, narrow thinking, etc., etc. That's all well and good, but me, for this sort of talking therapy would perhaps have been a better approach. For me, that's where the journaling came in. And also a present moment awareness was also very important for me, because I needed to understand that, you know, what was happening now wasn't going to go on forever. And really that I could then settle in the moment and find that I felt, you know, good or bad, but I could understand it.
I think I think my journey with mindfulness is again very similar. The present moment awareness thing was a bridge point for me, that because my tendency is to catastrophize. If there's a problem, I automatically prepare for Armageddon, regardless of whether it's an overdue bill or a car accident or anything in between, and that is exhausting. It's exhausting and it's frightening. But present moment awareness, I don't meditate every day anymore. I fully intend to start again. It's not through any desire to consciously not do it. I just never get around to doing it. But I feel that I don't know about you, but what I get from Head to Heart Network was when you're posting your posts, they're always very considered, very, very well thought out, very, very eloquent reminders. And it's just a little nudge every day or every 2 days just to, you know, just to take that breath and be in that moment. Do you find that putting those posts online is your mindfulness or forms part of your mindfulness as well as reminding other people?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you've kind of summarized very succinctly what that sort of the posts, or even if it's a blog post or if it's a Facebook post. I have to say the blog posts have dropped a little bit because I'm doing another course at the moment. But certainly the posts on Twitter or Instagram or Facebook are all caught little captures of the moment that make me think out something, maybe write it down and then maybe put it out there. And that's the thing that I found very interesting, that people will respond back to me about something that is just sort of flagged up in my head. I felt I needed to sort of capture a moment or an essence of, and then it's gone. And actually quite a useful thing for me, because I've got something to then refer back to, which then informs the next step. It's incremental steps towards I don't know what, but I certainly know it's a stepping stone in the right direction. It feels right.
Absolutely. And it also kind of comes back to that mindfulness practice of identifying what it is, you know, rather than identifying the worry itself. You say, I am worrying, and then you label it, and then you can accept it and move on. And it's almost like you're creating that set of bookmarks, coping bookmarks for yourself later, isn't it? I mean, I've referred back to a few of your posts in the past. I find them very useful. I also find them very amusing, because you have a very interesting way of incorporating facial expressions into different emotions, which I really like. And it's nice to. It's also nice to see the way that you incorporate your home life and nature and all that into that, because it feels relevant without being too flowery. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
It does, but it's interesting because I'm known for being verbose. I'm known for being wordy and flowery, and my life is a sort of a made up of metaphor. I spend my life telling stories. In fact, I just submitted my midterm piece or final term piece for one of my semesters.
Yeah,
and unfortunately, I'm 1,000 words over what I should have been.
Right.
When I was talking to a member of the staff in the business I worked for, he was like saying, "Well, you know, how have you done that?" So I just like to take people on a journey, and that's kind of what I do. I spend my life telling stories. But it's interesting that those stories are the way I see the world. You know, some people see it very analytical. Some people see it very financial based. I see it through stories and what I see around me and the interaction with the kids with the wife. God, she tolerates me. She's an amazing woman. and that's how I do it. So I'm glad you like it. It's very generous of you to say you like it. So
no problem at all, mate. So how have you found the reception? I mean, because this is all just you from the ground up. You know, it started from a couple of posts on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and it does seem to be swelling. You do seem to be getting some good feedback and interactions and a kind of a bit of a following, which is really, really good.
Yeah, for me, it's an evolution. It's something that's going to evolve, and it has evolved since day one. I mean, for me, it was started off as trying to almost record what I had been finding that had helped me. You know, it could have been the mindfulness, it could have been the breath meditation, it could have been the body scan, and then it sort of has morphed into more, as you say, stories or little snippets of experience. I've brought in various different sort of theories or ideas. I'm reading very broadly again, so you know that will also bring in other things. So it is evolving, and I think the thing is about it, there's a little bit of a pause in it for the moment, not for any other reason other than the fact that, as I say, I'm doing this course, I'm doing an MBA, which is going to take a bit of time. Also makes my head hurt a little bit. But for me, it's there. It's always in the background. It's always something that I always go back to, and that's actually a very important point. Like when you are wandering off and your head's spinning, and you're drifting off into, as you say, neurosis or depression, which is the thing that I suffered from, or lack of thinking straight. To have something to go back to kind of almost grounds you, but it also brings you back to where you know safety is. It's like a harbour, brings you back.
Absolutely.
You move away from the storm.
Absolutely, and also being able to quantify it and be very rigid about the fact that when you posted that, I was in a good place. I'm not in a good place now, but I was then, which means I can be again. And again, it's that reassurance that gives. That helps you through those troubling times, isn't it?
It does, and just going back to the original point in terms of how I've found the reception, I've connected with a number of people, which are again from different sort of backgrounds. One's an acupuncturist, another friend of mine's does meditation teaching. As I say, I've got a friend in America who turned me on to this, and she's in the education system over there. So I'm in a nice group of people that have received me, but also received it in the manner it was meant. You know, it's non-threatening. It's just there to perhaps just sow a seed, and from that seed, who knows what will grow. And again, who knows what, where I will end up with doing this. But for now, I'm grateful to meet people like you, and I've known you for a long time, you know that.
It's been a long time, mate, yeah.
We've had a lot of conversations over a pint or five. Yeah. But it's, from that point of view, I'm just pleased to be able to chat to people like you.
So what is your aim for Head to Heart Network, having started it? You've talked about it sort of being a sort of representation of your journey. How do you see that going in the months and the years to come?
It's interesting. I don't know. And I think that's what's quite exciting about it, because you just, it is a journey. Life is a journey. I'm a 46-year-old father of two, married for, 17 years now, worked in the same job for the last 20 years. You could sort of say, well, is that my life? But the one thing that I've learned is actually, who you think you are isn't necessarily who you actually are. And at the core of you, I call it my own true nature. Deep inside of me, there is an essence of Jonathan that is, could be anything, and this could go anywhere. Mm. Who's to say I can't, like you, get tattoos and start driving Harleys?
You won't catch me on a Harley, mate.
You know what I mean. But it's one of those things, you sort of think the barriers that you put in front of you are barriers that you create for yourself, I think Head to Heart could move on and become something. I mean, it came out, actually, strangely enough, for another podcast I was listening to. And it was that kind of idea that, the head and the heart is brought together, and, there is a network, a group of people that work together, and it could be in business, it could be in mental health, it could be in, any environment. And really, we all have, you know, a heart that pumps around and keeps us alive, but a head that we need to keep also working. So
absolutely.
I don't know. I don't know where it will end. Hopefully it will be positive whichever way, either for myself or for others.
Absolutely. And I wish you every success with it. I think it's a wonderful thing that you're doing, and I look forward to your posts when they come through. Jonathan, thanks so much for your time, and hopefully we'll see you on the podcast again soon.
Thank you very much, Simon. Nice to speak to you.
You too.
So that was Jonathan and Head to Heart Network. I'm sure you'll agree that that was a very interesting interview, and it certainly rang a lot of bells with me once again. I always love seeing Jonathan's posts on Instagram. It's a lovely reminder to remain present and just take a breath every now and again, especially when work's getting a bit stressful, or you know, I've just got my eye off the ball a little bit, or if I'm spending too much time on my damn phone, you know. Sometimes seeing those posts, it just reminds me that, you know, there's other things out there. It's wonderful. I'll be sharing the links to the Head to Heart Network posts on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook when I put the episode up, so look out for those. I've known Jonathan a long, long time, and it's really, really wonderful to see how well this is doing. And we're hoping to get Jonathan back on as well, because he's a very widely read man on the subject in all and around Buddhism, spirituality, mindfulness, philosophy, psychology. There's a lot of intersection there, and I'm hoping to get some good book reviews and literature reviews out of him as well, which will be useful. So today, one thing I did want to talk about briefly was that I've started a new mindfulness exercise, sort of. It's called bullet journaling. I'd never actually heard of it. I was speaking to a friend of mine a few days ago, and they put me onto it. Bulletjournal.com is the website, and bullet journaling is described as a customizable and forgiving organization system. It can be your to-do list, your sketchbook, your notebook, and your diary, but most likely it will be all of the above, and it will teach you to do more with less. The way I see it is it appeals to me on two levels. Firstly, I could write lists about lists. I love writing lists. It helps me to declutter my mind. My mind is like a filing cabinet at the best of times, with all the drawers open and bits everywhere. And writing lists does help me kind of just get things out of my head, really. Sometimes it's just as simple as that. And secondly, of course, I have a very healthy obsession with stationery. So the ability to buy a new notepad for any purpose is always a boon. So I'm going to be starting this bullet journaling. It's kind of a customizable key. It's like a shorthand for you to be able to organize your life. They do suggest certain things on the website as an example of the key, but they can be very customizable. There's three or four websites I've been to just today where people have been messing around with it to suit their own headspace, their own ideas, their own lifestyle. So I'm gonna be toying around with that over the next couple of weeks, just to see whether that fits in with what I want it to do and whether it works. I hope it does, because there's nothing better than buying a new notepad. Other than that, it's been a very normal, busy working day today. It's been the weather's been beautiful, and I'm hoping it's going to last into the weekend, because we've got visits from family over the weekend, which is always lovely. If you do want to get in touch with me for any reason, if you want to give some feedback, you want to make some comments, ask some questions, contribute, share, anything you like, please do feel free to email me. It's podcast@thinkinghabits.co.uk. It doesn't have to be a face-to-face interview. You don't have to be recorded. It can be anonymous. We can completely anonymise everything. Absolutely discreet with regards to that. No problem at all. You only contribute what you feel you wish to contribute, if you feel that it's something you would like to do. At the end of the day, the whole purpose of this is to help people, and if I can help one person with this, then my job is worthwhile. So I'd love to hear from you. Please do send me your comments. Until next week, keep talking, and if you need to talk, you know where I am. Bye.